This is fun! The FU Network.
Now, let's listen.
Originating from Fun, the FU Network's base north of Toronto, and bringing in voices from coast to coast, this is FU Politics, discussion and debate show, Rock'em Sock'em Politics. I'm Ed the Sock. Welcome to Rock'em Sock'em Politics, where we take a bare knuckles look at the politics of the week, news of the week, stories of the week, and whatever other bullshit we can cram in. There is no BS here. Everybody that's on the show says things as they see them. They may not be correct, but it is their opinion, and they're allowed to express it. Though there are rules, the rules are that we are always civil to each other with mutual respect and maintain a sense of humor, because the first sign that you've lost your mind, lost your perspective, especially talking about issues, is when you lose the ability to laugh. It's a sanity check. So I almost lost the ability to laugh today, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But first, let me tell you who's with us this week. We've got Stuart Benson. Stuart, say hello. You all right? We've got Lex Gore. Lex, thanks. Glad to have you back.
Hello.
Hello. Justin Whitehead. Hey. And Justin is going to talk to us today about Greta Thunberg shortly, because I'm sure you're unfamiliar with the name because it's been such an underreported story. But we'll be talking about that. There's some interesting topics, including internalized misogyny. If you've never heard of that, you're going to learn something tonight. And Stuart is not talking this week about any new evidence of anybody in jail having been killed.
So I have tried.
Yeah, I make no secret, nor am I embarrassed, of my history on television, including Ed and Red's Night Party, the show that had the hot tub and the go-go dancing girls, interviews with porn stars. I got no shame about that, even in our Me Too era, because I got news for you. Back then, first of all, every one of our dancers, every one of the ladies, the performers in the hot tub, they all had names. They were human beings, okay? They weren't just there to be pretty, all right? They were there to be personalities. They all had mics. They could interject when they wanted to, say whatever they wanted to. The ladies in the hot tub made up their own shtick. The purpose of the hot tub was not, okay, yes, there was some titillation factor, absolutely. I was trying, we were all trying, to shock the over-moralized Canadian establishment who were terrified of female empowerment.
It was no worse than the Man Show, and Jimmy Kimmel's got like a late night.
Exactly. Exactly. And when I need you to defend me, I'll ask you. Otherwise, sorry. Shut up. Female empowerment is not just giving women jobs that men have had in the past. It's also letting women do things that only women can do and enjoy their feminine power, especially when you're young and you're at the height of your powers. The ladies in the hot tub, they would come up with their own shtick that most of the time shocked me. I was surprised by it. So is there any indication that we told any of these ladies what to say or what to do is bullshit? The purpose of the hot tub was that we would get emails from guys who would say, I want to go in the hot tub with those hotties. And they were just such strutting morons that I loved, I relished every week when one of them would, they'd show up, they'd be all ripped, or they wouldn't be, and they'd get into their bathing suits, and we'd introduce them, and they'd get into the hot tub, and all of that macho shit would disappear because the women just owned them. And that was the point of that, was just to show how when coming up against feminine power, a woman who was confident in her own femininity, her own beauty, and beauty is diverse, men just, the macho thing fades away. And it was trying to show that it was, that macho is a performance, and it's bullshit, and it can't stand up to women who are confident. The interviews with the porn stars was because we were humanizing people who general society thought were just a bunch of heroin addicts. We were showing that they were intelligent, they had career plans, they were fun, they were funny, and some of the the best people we ever interviewed. I interviewed top celebrities. I would have interviewed porn stars every day if I could have, because they were just nicer people than celebrities, okay? Than most celebrities. We had dancers that were size 1 up to about size 16. I think size 18 was the biggest one. We showed women of different colors and ethnicities and body types and showed them all as equally beautiful. Okay? This I have no shame about. And the people who should be ashamed are the people who try to shame me and Leanna and anybody else associated with the show, because most of the shame comments come from other women who think that for some reason these women who did the show were desperate or poor and we took advantage of them, and that they couldn't possibly have wanted to go on a show like that and couldn't have possibly wanted to dress up in those outfits, which they then took and danced for free at dance clubs the next day. We paid them to do what they would have done for free. Because these women made choices that these other women wouldn't have made, they determined that these women couldn't have made these choices on their own, which is fucking insulting. We'll get to that subject with Lex. But there's a piece of shit website called the Shit Post Millennial. And they published a hit piece against me, because they're funded by conservative dark money. You don't know what dark money is. Dark money is money that comes from very, very wealthy conservatives or conservative business organizations that comes through as sort of secret donations that nobody knows about. And it funds all these right-wing mouthpieces. And left doesn't have dark money, because the left's too busy fighting amongst itself to decide who to give any money to. But they're funded by right-wing dark money to take shots at anybody who's a threat to business or to conservatism. And during this election period, I have emerged as somebody who is a threat to conservatism, because I'm able to expose and humiliate Andrew Scheer and his lies and the lying liars who work for him. I had the head of, I think it was his head spokesperson, took a shot at me on Twitter. A guy looks like Jimmy Olsen from the Superman comics. I've had lots of heavy hitters take shots at me. So I should have expected that the right was going to use this little dish, this little shit rag website to take a shot at me. And the thing that offends me the most is that it's bad journalism. Okay? It's not well researched, it's inaccurate, and it's badly written. If you're going to take a shot at me, at least do a good job. Don't fucking insult me with something that sounds like it was some shit poster troll wrote on 8chan. Okay? So that's, if you want to look that up, go ahead and look it up. It's a bunch of horse shit. It's a bunch of people funded by conservative groups, including anti-abortion groups, anti-choice groups, calling me a misogynist. If fucking irony didn't exist, it would have to be created for this kind of bullshit. But I was very angry about it before. Now, as you can tell, I've mellowed. All right. That takes us to our first topic, which Lex Gore is going to present, which is the topic of internalized misogyny. Lex, go for it.
So a little bit of history here. I used to have a YouTube that, amidst other things, criticized feminism. And it got report flooded into oblivion by feminists and male feminists, because nothing says feminism like silencing outspoken women like me. And a lot of things, I've encountered this a lot, what they'll do, and the same thing goes with internalized racism, is if they don't like what you say, they're like, oh, sweetie, you know, the internalized misogyny is coming from inside the house, or sweetie, you've got internalized misogyny, shh, shh, shh. So it's a very condescending way to shut down somebody who has a different opinion than you, and it's actually upholding feminism or toxic feminism over the opinions of women themselves. It's a way of shushing someone and telling them that they're basically diseased and they're not allowed to speak, and that anything they say is invalid because they have internalized misogyny.
And internalized misogyny, as I first heard it, was applied to the women who were on Ed and Red's night party, who chose to be in the hot tub, who chose to be our dancers, because those women clearly couldn't have been thinking clearly if they chose to make those choices. So they were exhibiting internalized misogyny. In other words, they were performing in a way that misogynist culture told them that they should perform, that they weren't actually capable of having opinions that were different than the opinions of these women who criticized them, which is the height of insult. The idea of feminism is that women can do whatever they want, within the law, of course, that women can't be limited simply by their sex, and can't be told what to wear, and can't be told what not to wear, and can't be told where to go and where not to go, and can't be told what jobs they can have or jobs they should have. It's about increasing women's choices, women's opportunities. And we paid these young ladies, and we treated them like family. You will not hear complaints about how they were treated on our set, even though they walked around wearing barely anything, because every guy looked at them in the eyes, nowhere else, because we respected them and we had affection for them. We were all like a family. But according to these people who identify themselves as feminists, and feminism is a spectrum. There's the crazy end, and then there's the reasonable ones. The crazy ones determined that these young women had been hypnotized by misogyny into presenting themselves this way. They couldn't possibly be responsible for making those decisions. That's what internalized misogyny is. It robs these women of their dignity and their ability to make choices.
I'm going to do a coup de grace here, as I'm an ex-sex worker. And when I say that, I frequently get like, I get treated like I was a victim. I thought it was a great time. I had fun. I found it empowering. I found it liberating. I have mostly good memories. Hell, I miss it sometimes, being a wife and mother. It was great. And I get this implication that I was a victim, and that, when I corset myself and, go up on stage and do my punk rock thing, that it's because, my husband, my guitarist, put me up to it somehow, that somehow I'm like, some brainwashed sex doll that men push me into it. It's like, no, I was actually exercising my feminine power by being a sex worker, by dressing up like an 80s hooker who has the two best lines in the movie, by being me. That was nothing to do with men. That was all me. But the way that feminists regard me is that I'm some, brainless, subservient doll that, men pushed around to serve them or what have you, when it was all me. It was all what I wanted. It was all my choices. And I was never a victim. Those were my choices.
Yeah. And again, when we talk about feminists, it is a spectrum. There are really reasonable feminists. Like Leanna is a very reasonable feminist. And as a result, she got shit from both sides of the spectrum of feminism, because she was in the middle saying, there's some things here that make sense and some things that don't, and some things that are deliberate and some things that are accidental. And yeah, there's issues we need to deal with, but there's rational ways of dealing with them without making enemies of other people. And for that, she was a bad feminist.
She was raised the same way I was. Like, my mother was a hear me roar feminist, and that's the kind of feminism that I was raised with, Camille Paglia and that school of hear me roar. But now it's hear me cringe, hear me talk about safe spaces, hear me, despite not having ever survived a sexual assault, say, death to all males, and males should have a curfew, and I'm scared to leave my dorm room. And it's treating being female as if it's a disability. And being the mother of a girl, I worry, because female privilege is actually, I'm not saying it in a condescending way, female privilege is large if you know how to use it. I could sit here and for 20 minutes rattle off why I believe that I'm privileged being a woman, and that I have all of this power that men don't have. And that's hear me roar. That's what it's about. Being a woman is powerful. And those porn stars and strippers you had, they were wielding their power. They weren't victims.
Isn't it interesting?
We're allowing them to.
Isn't it interesting that these women who will criticize women like you, Lex, or the women performers and artists we had on our late night show, have so much in common with the conservatives on the right, the people that think that The Handmaid's Tale is something to beat off to. They have the same ideas as to what women should be, that women should conform to certain ideas, certain modesty, things like that. Those crazy feminists, the ones who are on fire, the crazy radical ones, have more in common with people who they claim to hate, conservative misogynists who want to control women, than they know. Telling them that will freak them out. So I hope some of you are listening and you've been freaked out. Do you have more you want to add, Lex?
Lots, but we should let other people talk.
All right. Okay, let's move over to Justin. You say you can speak to this issue a bit. You were a sex worker once too, Justin.
What does the D stand for this episode?
What does the D stand for this episode, Justin D. Whitehead?
Right now the D stands for discretion. So we're going to...
I like my D better.
Okay, all right.
But, as far as I can speak to this, I'm definitely, I consider myself a feminist. I have been for a long time. But in that, being a man as well, obviously, I've never seen my position as a male feminist to ever be telling a woman what is or is not real feminism or what they should or should not be doing with their bodies or how they should feel about what they choose to do with their own bodies. That is absolutely not where any real, okay, well here I just said I'm not going to tell people how to be feminist, but I'm going to tell some people how to be feminist. That is not how you be an ally to feminism. You don't come in and tell people what they should or shouldn't think. I've heard both, I've heard people who are currently sex workers or have been, sex workers in a previous profession who, they're fine with it. They loved it. Nobody pushed them into it. They say that, they came to it of their own decision and of sound mind, and that's what they wanted to do. And they're not ashamed of it. They nothing bad about it whatsoever. I've also heard the opposite. I've heard some people who they were pushed into it by a partner at the time or by a family member, or, there's all kinds of stories of people who ended up in it for the wrong reasons.
That's human trafficking. Well, sure. And I think that the two need to be separated, because when people hear sex work, I think that sex trafficking and sex work are kind of two different things.
And you know what else? How many people have been pushed into shitty jobs by family conditions that have nothing to do with sex? You think that all the people working fast food windows are doing it because they fucking love it? This is just a stupid thing to assume.
Cherry on the shit sundae. If somebody thinks that selling your body is giving a blowjob, but a miner is not selling their body, somebody who mines minerals, they need to rethink themselves.
Well, I would say a sex worker who takes proper care with condoms and so on and safer sex is selling her body less than those coal miners who went and got black lung and died horrible deaths.
Well, a big core part of feminism as a whole is about equality. And, every man on earth, most people don't ever question a guy who wants to become a male stripper or anything like that. They can do whatever the fuck they want.
Oh, yes, well, we do.
Okay, sure. Yes. But, but most people, most men get off with, you can do whatever the hell you want more so. And people don't usually ever look at a male stripper and think, oh, you must be a victim. Like, it's just not the same mentality is not applied.
No, they just assume he's a, gay guy, or he has a drug habit, or his father.
Oh, for sure. Like, there's no.
I knew a guy. I knew a male stripper. He was a guy who was a male stripper. The totality of his existence wasn't male stripper. He worked at Much Music. He wasn't an on-air guy. He's nobody you're going to recognize. But he worked there. And he did the male dancing, because it brought in some good extra money.
Yeah.
You know, we teased them the same way we teased everybody about everything, but there was no disrespect. Listen, there was one of the young ladies who danced on our show was doing a triple major in university, a triple major. So this is not an idiot. And she was a peeler, a stripper, a dancer, whatever you want to call her. And she did that because it made enough money that she could manage having a triple major. She would every now and again get overwhelmed by the criticism and shit and stop and take another job and not be able to make enough money to pay for all that she needed to do. Because when she was dancing, she set her own schedule. She made her money, you know, she, and everyone always assumes that, through internalized misogyny, these women are just allowing themselves to be dolls and toys of the patriarchy. And that's just a load of shit. Stuart, you have something you want to say?
Well, for just for this immediate thing, it always did strike me as kind of funny that you can look at the relationship between the stripper and the guy getting the lap dance and think that the man is the one in the power position there.
Oh, boy.
If you just looked at that like as a, like from an objective and you had no other like prior like preconceived notions about this was, the woman just dancing and getting handed money seems like she's the one. I think I would assume if I had, if I didn't know what this was, I would assume she would, she was in the power position.
But that's, well, like, that's, it's 100% true. Listen, I used to, you know, we used to go to these, I don't know what you call them, strip bars. This is probably a nicer term, but we would go to them and I would see these ladies that I knew. They would have an eye for the people, for the men who were coming in. They would laser focus in on the ones they knew that they could take the most money from, because they knew that these guys, that if all they had to do was pretend they had an interest in these guys, and these schmucks would just dole out the money trying to show off how rich they are. And at the end of the day, these guys left with a pocket full of blue balls and no money. And the women had money and had not, what did they do? They danced, they showed their titties, so fucking what? They were so in charge. They knew, they were like experts in psychology. They knew who their targets were. And how come we will make fun of, or in some ways demonize, or look down upon the dancer, but not the guy who goes in and pays the dancer? Like, why is that the case? Why is it the dancer that gets looked down upon and the guy who goes in is just a guy doing what a guy does? This is a bunch of horse shit. Just like internalized misogyny is a bunch of horse shit. It's funny how, I firmly believe that a woman should have body autonomy, control over her body. And the radical feminists will agree with me on that when it comes to abortion. But when it comes to they want to go in a hot tub on my TV show, it disappears into the air, into the ether. The idea that these women should have the right to do that without criticism. Anyway, it's a load of horseshit.
Well, they have to write "proud slut" on their body in order to be taken seriously by other women.
Well, another great example of like a recent example of internalized misogyny was the sort of right wing, hysteria over those pictures of Justin Trudeau and Bianca Andreescu, spearheaded in part by Linda Frum, which like the whole the big thing, the joke about the whole thing was them like because they just took like a snapshot of their interaction, which he's just sort of like he has his arm around her shoulder. And like he's looking at her face, and like they're close to each other, and they're all going, "Oh, he's like invading her privacy." It's like, did you ask Bianca? Did you ask her if that was okay with her? Did she say that?
Well, automatically assumed that she was a victim and he was a creeper. People should know that, especially news photographers who are out there, they take like bursts of pictures.
Yeah.
So they will grab a number of moments. That moment that they captured there, you don't know what preceded it. You don't know what came after it. You don't know anything. There's no context. And they assumed that there was some kind of seduction going on, where it may have simply been an awkward interchange of them moving from one pose to another. Like,
yeah, if Linda Frum can't conceive of an like a physical interaction between a man and a younger woman without assuming some sort of insidious sexual like undertones, then I think that says a lot more about Linda Frum than it does about like either Justin Trudeau or Bianca or that interaction.
Linda Frum is an embarrassment to anything that walks on two legs. Well, she's an insult to the fact that our ancestors evolved to our present state, and one of them turned out to be Linda Frum.
I could do an entire episode just on the Frum family. Like, David Frum is—he's like in the same league as Linda. Let's just say
she's
that.
Worse.
I don't know, because she didn't help start the Iraq War.
You know what? That Iraq War would have started with or without a speech by David Frum. It would
Yeah, but it did start with a speech from David Frum.
It doesn't matter. He was just somebody who wrote some words. It's not like what Linda Frum does with in the Senate and the horrible things that she says.
I can send you some op-eds by David Frum that might change your opinion. He's
I've read some things about him that I've read some of his op-eds that make me think he's a piece of crap, and I've read some things that have made me think, okay, in this case, the guy can be reasonable. I've never read a single thing from Linda Frum that hasn't made me ashamed that I walk the same earth, and that when she breathes out, I might be breathing in that same air at some point. Let's move on to Justin Whitehead. And Justin is going to talk about a story that's heavily underreported. Go ahead, Justin.
Greta Thunberg, extremely underreported. So if you scroll through Twitter lately, you've noticed, you know, her name was trending. But the reason why it was trending is interesting. I mean,
first of all, don't assume that everybody knows who the hell she is.
Okay, so she's a 16-year-old from Sweden, and she's here talking about climate change. And she, a year ago, almost a year ago today, she wanted to do something about the climate crisis that she saw happening. And she spoke to her parents, and she spoke to even, she wrote a big post about this, which is worth looking up for anybody who wants more info. But essentially, she was approached by a group, and they wanted to kind of use her as a spokesperson, kind of. And she rejected what they wanted to do. They wanted her to go to this other rally thing, and she just didn't agree with it. She cut ties with them, and she wanted to do her own sort of thing. So she wanted to strike from school every Friday. And she had to go to her parents and convince them, because she said they really were not on board with her doing that. You know, most parents aren't just going to go, oh yeah, sure, go ahead, skip, you know, a fifth of your classes every week. And so she did it. And when she started, she was just sitting by herself with a sign in front of a government building. And slowly but surely, she built up support over the last year. And now she has come over on a sailboat from Europe, and she arrived in New York in time to do last week. She participated in a huge youth climate protest across the whole world, but she was at the one in New York. That's who she is, and that's what she's doing. And she's given a few speeches, and she's been trending on Twitter partly because of the speeches she's given, but also because a lot of really notable people, almost all very notable men, have been really crapping on her for a lot of it, and not in, you know, combating what she's saying specifically or talking about her argument that she's making, but trying to do that same sort of thing, not like where they're saying, you know, it's not coming from the person who's saying something, saying, oh, I was mentally ill. They're trying to push that on her. Yes, she has, you know, several different disorders, which she has been very open about, but they're trying to say that, oh, because she has mental health issues, she must be being taken advantage of, and she must not be speaking. Yeah, she's got Asperger's, she's on the autism spectrum, and
sorry.
I think you're right, though. Worse. I think you're absolutely right. It's not a, I don't think that's, it's considered a mental illness.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not married to any of the particular nomenclature around that. No,
you're
it's
not
fine.
Being nit- She's not being nitpicky. It was an ignorant thing to say, Justin, but anyway, go on.
She's also got OCD, I believe she said. So, you know, there's a, effectively, the point that I was trying to make around the mental health quote unquote thing is other people are trying to suggest that she is mentally ill, and they're trying to use that to say that because she is different in these ways, she must be being taken advantage of and she must be lesser, and therefore she doesn't know what she's doing and she's only just parodying what other people are telling her to do. And it's just bullshit. Like, this is one of the most intelligent, well-spoken, passionate young people I've seen in so long, and she writes all her own stuff. She talks, you know, to the camera. You can tell it's her, this person. And she's been so threatening to these people, all to the point where guess who made a comment about her? President, unfortunately, Donald Trump. And his quote was, he quoted a news article about her, and he said, "She seems like a very happy young girl looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. So nice to see." And it was meant sarcastically, right? But you know what she did? This is the beautiful part. She changed her Twitter bio to read, "A very happy young girl who's looking forward to a bright and wonderful future." And it was just the biggest fuck you. And it was so great. So that she was trending for that too, which is wonderful. But the overall topic that I kind of wanted to bring in was just, you know, all these, this older white dudes especially are so threatened by this little kid and the ways that they're attacking her and ignoring her arguments, just attacking her and trying to make her seem like a victim and all this. It's just gross.
Well, it's because she's had effectiveness, because absolutely, there's this contrast between this powerful message about the environment and it's coming from this little kid, and that novelty is something that news organizations can get their hooks into. Mm-hmm. You know, just another adult telling us how we're doomed, blah blah blah, Charlie Brown's teacher, blah blah blah. But you know, there's a news novelty when it's this young girl telling us things that we already knew. But here's my concern. I agree with what you're saying, that these guys are threatened by her because she's got some mileage and she's managed to make some inroads and she's gotten some coverage and she's got people thinking about the environment and she's gotten headlines about environmental concerns. But so have many other people before. And my concern is just what's happened in the past to young people who have been taken in to a cause and have been celebrated by a cause. They rarely end up in a good place later. And I'm concerned that she's being taken advantage of, not by the environmentalists, but by the media, that they're making her into this this figure. I mean, it's like the Children's Crusade, mm-hmm, back during the Crusades. It didn't end well. It's very rare for young people to get this much media attention for a cause and for it to turn out good for them. So my concern is just, who's looking out for her welfare?
You could say the same about any 16-year-old girl out there, whether she's famous because she said, "Catch me outside, how about that," and got $1 million, or she's wearing a crop top that says, "Satan is my daddy," and taking close-ups of her tongue on Instagram and getting like 100 million followers. Like, or, you know, Miley fucking Cyrus. Like, all of these young women, I think that Greta would be... You know, she would be willing to take this bullet, you know, to for the environment and for this cause, because she knows she's putting herself in the front line. She knows she's putting herself in harm's way. The media does eat its children. I think she's intelligent enough to know this. I think she's aware of it. And I think
Lex, I gotta disagree with you. You think you might think you know it. First of all, when you're 16, everything you think you know, you don't know.
That's
okay? And she might think she knows what she's in for, but she's up against powerful interests. And no, she can't possibly know fully what she's in for. She's concerned about her world. She's concerned about her future, which, all right, fine. Give her credit for that. But I think that there's a lot of people that are using her for their own purposes. And I have a problem with that. I get concerned about these young people. I mean, look what happened to the survivors of those school shootings and how they were attacked, how they made themselves, they were the public face of gun control, and they wound up being wounded by attacks. They're not physically wounded, but, you know, emotionally wounded by attacks by opponents of gun control. They were talked about horribly. No gun control happened. Nothing, no gun control happened. Nothing changed. And I don't think that Greta Thunberg is going to change much about what's happening with the environment. Good for her for what she's done. I give her credit. But just because she's the flavor of the week, and what happens when they move on?
That's sort of how our species seems to work, though, isn't it? Like, we always look to these leaders, and we look to the flavor of the week. But if it is a person, you know, that we can sort of take an ideology and sort of wrap it around a person, it just seems to be what people do. It's in the Doe bullpen this weekend, they were talking about tribalism and everything, and it's just such a fundamental part of our species. Is you can't look to a civilization that doesn't fall into outgroup bias and tribalism and whatnot. But that also, it works its way into, like, you know, why do we run all of our countries with a single figurehead? You know, why are they not run by a small council or something? You know, it all boils down to we just love these, like, heroes and these anti-hero figures. And it's
you know what? Okay, I see your point, but have you ever been on a council or a committee?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you still wonder why we don't run things, countries and so on, by committees? The only good thing any committee I've ever been on has ever decided is to adjourn. All right? Committees are where ideas go to die, because everybody can hide in a committee. They can all say, well, it wasn't my choice, it was that person's choice, or I just agreed with this person, or what. There's a reason that we have individual leaders, because that's the person who's going to be accountable for it. Whereas committees are designed so no one's accountable for anything. They're organizations designed so that each person covers each other's ass.
Right. I think we could do it differently. Like, you know, you could do a committee structure very differently, but it's like you said, the way they run right now, absolutely. It's the reason why most people like a singular leader, is so you can pin blame and you can, you know, you can just look to somebody. Like, look at this, all of the stuff that we're talking about with these elections too. It's all just about the party leaders. There's 338, you know, people for each party running across the country. But how do we cover that many people? It's almost impossible. You get
lost neighborhood by neighborhood. You hope that each neighborhood that has a candidate is covering their candidate.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
All right. Stuart, you wanted to say something.
Well, just wanted to defend the Greta Thunberg as a kid as well, because it does sort of remind me of the Stoneman Douglas kids a little bit too, especially with how they've been treated online. Like, when they got attacked, but in fairness to them, like, they're Generation Z, I guess, so they were born, they know nothing but posting online. So they defended themselves pretty well. They handled the people coming at them with a lot of deft and humor. So give them credit for that. And also, maybe Greta may not solve anything, and the Stoneman Douglas kids didn't create instant gun reform, but it takes a lot of social capital to move the Overton window even a little bit. And what the Stoneman Douglas kids and what Greta are doing is they are spending a lot of social capital that they are accumulating on those specific causes, and it may not move it all the way across the goal line, but it's definitely getting yards. We may get a first down out of this to really just stretch this metaphor as much as possible.
You know what, Stuart?
Yeah.
That may be, I don't know how many panels we've done together now.
Yeah.
That may be the most intelligent, valuable thing you've ever said on any panel. Usually when you finish talking, I think, why the hell is Stuart here? But when really well said.
Thank you.
And you changed my mind a little bit.
I'll tell you that. Because every once in a while I can pull
things
off.
You're right. Sometimes it takes a tipping point. Mm-hmm. And it takes pushing and pushing and pushing to get to that tipping point. And if nobody's pushing, we never get to the tipping point. And we never know what the tipping point's going to be. You're right. That your point is well taken. That while they may not, Greta might not be changing environmental policy for countries and for the world, and while the kids at Stonemason Douglas, the mass shooting survivors, didn't affect gun control very much, it's all moving the needle a little bit. So you make a good point, Stuart. So you actually made it worthwhile having you here.
Thank you.
This week.
I'm on.
All right. I'm going to wrap it up for all of us. And thank everybody for being here. Lex Gore, thank you for your opinions.
Thank you.
And for sharing your life experience. Not a lot of people would be as honest as you are, but then very few people are you. So thank you, Lex. All right. And Justin Whitehead, Justin D. Whitehead. The D this week stands for?
Discretion.
Discretion. Very good.
It does not. Never will. Stands for dick.
Well, that's what it'll stand for next week. And
many would agree.
Stuart Benson from Ottawa, self-described leftist dirtbag. I still don't think you're a dirtbag. All right. I'm Ed the Sock, and this is the Rock'em Sock'em Politics here on FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network. Don't forget to support us. You can go to PayPal. Just give us, drop us some coin to help us keep going. At PayPal, the address is funetworktv@gmail.com, patreon.com. Be a monthly patron. Keep us going. Patreon.com. That's Patreon is with an E. Patreon.com/FU Network TV. Help us out. Be part of the solution. Because there's a lot of right-wing dirtbags out there with lots of money that are funding lots of sites to take down people like us. And we're not going to let them. So let's all join together and try to restore people-centered media to Canada. And then we'll spread it around the world. But let's start in our part of the world first. So thank you, everybody. That's it. I still don't have a good sign-off for this show. So all I'm going to say is goodbye.